3. Identify the neighborhood loser and buy it. It's very rare for a good property to jump out and stare you in the face, but this does often happen in the form of the neighborhood loser. This is a property that, because of some underlying factor, no one wants. And as a result, it's selling for considerably less than its neighbors. It's helpful here to think of the word crisis. In Chinese, it actually has two meanings, danger and opportunity. The neighborhood loser is the same. It's a house that could be very dangerous to buy. Its detracting feature could prohibit it from going up in price and could make it difficult to resell. On the other hand, if you're creative and can identify and correct the detracting feature, you can almost overnight jump the property's value. Okay, now that I have your interest, what do I mean by a detracting feature? It could be anything from purple paint to being next to a large billboard. It could be a home that's too small or too large for its neighborhood. It could have no view in an area of view homes. What makes this property easy to identify, as I noted, is that it jumps out at you. Typically, its price is far lower than its neighbors, and the problem is usually easy to see. It's a property that's crying out for attention. A few years ago, a neighborhood loser jumped in my face. I was looking in the East Bay area of San Francisco in a town near Walnut Creek. All the homes were tract built, but they were well designed with a custom look. They were expensive, at the time going in the $400,000, all except this one house that was listed, but not selling, for $350,000. Why? I asked myself, and I went to see it. From the street, it seemed normal enough, except that it was slightly below road level. That means you looked down on it. This is not a desirable feature, but it is not in itself anything terrible, particularly since the drop was only a couple of feet. However, when I went through the house and into the backyard, I immediately saw the problem. The house was literally in a hole. The homes on both sides and in back were on higher ground. That meant that the neighbors could literally look over their fences and down into the home's backyard. There was not even a semblance of privacy, and no one wanted to buy a home where they would be under a magnifying glass. All buyers had passed on the property. I calculated that the house was selling for at least $50,000 less than its neighbors. I offered $325,000, and the sellers accepted without countering. They were thrilled to get out. I had bought the property for $75,000 less than its comparables, not counting the poor location. But, you may be thinking to yourself, the one thing you can't change is location. True, you can't move the house elsewhere, but sometimes you can disguise a location. Along one side, I immediately planted quick-growing shade trees. When I bought them, they were about 6 feet tall. When I sold the house 2.5 years later, they were 12 feet tall, and they filled out to screen that neighbor's property. Along the back of the property, it had a deep lot, I planted several fruit trees. After a couple of years, they not only shielded the property from the neighbor back there, but they provided fruit as well. Another positive. On the final side, which was most closely to the level of my property, I got the neighbor to agree to a 7-foot instead of a 5-foot fence and planted bougainvillea, a plant that grows quickly and tall, clings to fences, and provides beautiful flowers. Now that side was shielded too. The final problem was caused by the fact that water runoff from the neighboring property all came through mine on its way to the street. That meant that my backyard was wet and puddling a large part of the year, and that there was standing water under the house. A French drain, which is essentially a pipe with holes in it, placed underground, collected the lot water and moved it to the street. A sump pump under the house ensured that it remained dry. When I went to sell the house, still in the same location, still in the same hole, it did not look like it had any problem at all. Indeed, The backyard was a wonder of seclusion. It had beautiful flowers on one side, tall trees on another, and fruit-bearing trees in the back. It no longer was the neighborhood loser. It was a winner. And I got a good price for it, equal to comparable, well-located neighborhood properties. Needless to say, the profit was very satisfying. The moral to this story is that when a neighborhood loser jumps up and stares you in the face, put on your creative cap. Begin thinking imaginatively. Try to discover if there isn't some way you can turn the situation into an opportunity. In my case, careful landscaping was the key. In another case, it may be repainting, or fixing a foundation, or roof, or... There are always neighborhood losers. What's really rare are investors who can see beyond the dangers posed to the profit potential. 4. Rent relentlessly. As an investor in real estate, you will also inevitably become a landlord. You'll own property that you will need to rent out. When you first start, you may have only one or two rentals. However, after a few years, you may have four or five or even several dozen. With many properties, getting the rent in to cover your mortgage and other expenses is critical. Therefore, how you handle yourself as a landlord will determine to a large degree whether you'll be a success or failure in the field. As a landlord, you will need to rent relentlessly. By this, I do not mean that you'll be unfair. Far from it. What I mean is that you'll be all business. You won't let personal feelings cloud the issue. And as newcomers to the landlord market quickly discover, that's much harder to do than first appears. I have a good friend, Joe, who's been in the investing landlord business for nearly 30 years. Joe now owns close to 90 properties. Needless to say, he's quite wealthy, but he still handles his rentals on his own. In fact, that's his full-time job. And it's really a pleasure to watch him at it. He's fair with his tenants. I've never heard any complain that he wasn't, but he's all business. For example, he has a policy of no pets in most of his properties. He feels that pets leave odors, ruin rugs, and otherwise create high wear and tear. Therefore, he does not allow them in his best properties. He does allow them in some of his properties that he says are his dogs. I'm sure that there are many listeners who have pets and who, indeed, love pets. I include myself in this group. As a landlord, you will have a choice to make, to allow pets or not. Your own experience will help you to determine how you want to handle it.